This is the Oz Media Report. We're back for another week. My name, it's Dan Barrett. When COVID-19 hit this year, its impact on digital industries was similar to almost every other industry. If there were already cracks showing in your business and or industry, the impact of the global pandemic on your business was going to accelerate every problem you have. What COVID effectively did was force industries into fully accepting digital transformation. Radio is interesting. For years, radio was somewhat insulated from any seismic digital shifts. Impacted, sure, but not to the extent of other media. The benefits of radio content and distribution hadn't yet been replaced for the audience on their daily commutes. While the spectre of Spotify looms large, radio still seemed inoculated. But then COVID-19 hit. Nobody is safe from the horrors of 2020. The industry has seen radio station layoffs and networking of shows, less money on the table to attract big-name talent, and it now feels like an industry ripe for the inevitable digital transformation. The first radio audience survey for 2020 saw the Australian radio industry in a very different place than it was last week when Survey 7 came out. This week on the Oz Media Report, I'm chatting with Jake Chaloner. He's the publisher of radio industry news site, Radio Today. We discuss everything from the loss this year of the biggest name in radio through to Nine's investment in bringing back Brisbane's only commercial talk radio station back to life, through to the radio industry's preparedness for the incoming digital disruption. Jake, thanks so much for joining me. I'm super excited to talk about radio.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so look, I am incredibly interested in, I guess, it's 2020, radio is being completely disrupted like every other media industry right now. Radio, it sort of seems that for years and years, radio just wasn't being impacted by anything at all. And then suddenly, like, the wall just came crashing down on us. COVID hit, we've seen a whole bunch of layoffs around the place, and we'll get to that in a bit. But I guess maybe if we just want to think about the idea of legacy versus where we are now with a whole new status quo, we're in a radio industry without Alan Jones. And so I thought maybe we'd start there. What are the ramifications of Alan Jones having left? Like, we passed Survey 7. Is there actually an impact being felt by it, or is it kind of just something that happened and now we've moved on?
I think we have moved on. Look, I mean, Alan Jones has left his mark on radio. He was a hugely successful broadcaster or a shock jock, depending on your personal point of view on his content. His legacy will live on. But the reality is Nine Radio announced its restructure of say 2GB and its talk network at a really pivotal moment. I think you can't have this conversation and not talk about COVID, because really the upside for Nine Radio, although COVID has been, devastating to many sectors, including the media sector and the radio industry specifically, it has created a window of opportunity for Nine to capture a bigger audience and introduce it to really a new lineup. And that lineup, of course, with Ben Fordham, say, on Breakfast, Jim Wilson on Drive, etc., the demand for news content has never been greater. And that comes off the back of bushfires, COVID, the US election, etc. There is a silver lining there for Nine Radio. I think perhaps without all of those events taking place during this period, it would have been more difficult for Nine to continue to not only pull those numbers that, say, Alan was continuing and consistently drawing, but also to grow them, which they've managed to do. And that's not just because of those events. I think it's also about the power of, Nine's platform muscle. And we spoke about this on the Radio Today podcast last week with Viv, our editor. They've really got so many great assets in each of their markets, television, print, digital, etc., in order to, leverage what they're doing on the radio front and their radio assets. And I think they've done, honestly, a remarkable job of doing that. And credit where credit is due, Tom Malone, the managing director of Nine Radio, Greg Burns, the group content director, have made some really great talent decisions. Some, you could argue, are yet to sort of fully pay off. But Ben Fordham into Breakfast in Sydney, Russell into 3AW, I think really good moves.
Yeah, just going on a bit of a tangent from that, I'm really interested in Nine Radio because it kind of feels like people saw them investing in newspapers, and then obviously there's the radio, and the radio always felt like a bit of an adjunct to the rest. But as I'm standing here in November 2020, I'm looking at these various components of Channel 9, and it was all sitting together to make me feel that Channel 9 is probably one of the few media organizations that's really going to weather the storm from Australia. Because to my thinking, there's two types of media that are really going to be beneficial going forwards. There's news, which is obviously what you've just been talking about then, but also sport. Right. Outside of news and sport, like, you're really going to struggle because, you know, music can be taken care of by the Spotify's of the world, and, you know, you've got the Netflix of the world, yada, yada. But news and sport, you can't replicate that from a global perspective. Like, there's no way a big international company can move it and do this. So I look at Nine Radio, and I think that radio thrives on local, so that's a positive for them. Sports, they've just signed this massive deal with Rugby Union, and I appreciate Rugby Union's not really the sort of hippest sport of the moment, but it's still sizable. Like, it's important. It's a good foundational sport for them. Like, it just kind of seems that they're taking care of that news and sport, and the last sort of component is really building out that news. And I think that it just kind of feels like that live radio component is going to be super important to their news going forward.
It is. And the other competitive advantage that Nine Radio has and is often forgotten is that there's really nowhere else for their audience to go. A listener of, say, 2GB, and I keep going to 2GB because I'm in Sydney, but wherever you are in the country, they're not necessarily the sort of audience that they're going to, you know, find a home at the ABC. So really, they have a huge audience there. And I think they've seen that potential as well. They've gone, okay, there's a huge audience listening to radio. Perhaps we're a little bit too polarizing in the market now with some of our talent choices. Alan Jones being, you know, the obvious one. So if we sort of level that out a bit and just sort of put in some more, you know, likable characters like Ben Fordham, we're going to attract more of the audience that we're not getting now that still won't go to the ABC.
Yeah, it's really funny that you phrase it that way, because you look at what they're doing in Brisbane right now, and of all the media markets, I know Brisbane Radio the best because former Brisbane guy, so that's my bias that I'm wearing on my sleeve here. But I look at what they were doing with 4BC, which under Fairfax Radio, you know, they essentially they just shut down the entire local operations with the exception of a drive program. Now under Nine Radio, they've invested where Drive is now thriving. They've got a breakfast show happening. There's actual personalities and identifiable Brisbane people now heard on the radio. It actually feels like this town, which went from being strictly an ABC town, suddenly has that viable commercial option again for talk.
Yeah, that's true. And the thing about Brisbane is it's a music-led city, right? So the FM stations actually outrate the AM stations, which really only happens in Brisbane and Perth. Everywhere else, the AM stations lead in 10 plus, right? In the GFK radio ratings. So to see the changes that they made in Brisbane this year were incredibly strategic. And to be honest, I thought they would stick with network programming, but actually making that move back to local and using, you know, their multi-platform muscle, as we've talked about, has really turned that station around. And I think now Ray Hadley in mornings is now number one overall in that market. It's the first time, I think, in like four decades or a really long time that a single show on an AM station has outperformed all stations, including the FMs.
Yeah. Brisbane, obviously, ABC, I think, probably outperforms most other states in terms of options because there's so few talk options in Brisbane. So I think that's, yeah, but there's so much room for 4BC. And I guess maybe, is there anything you can really tell us about that growth in 4BC, of 4BC in Brisbane?
Oh, look, nothing particularly jumps to mind, to be honest. I think putting Neil Breen in there was a really interesting choice. He of course, comes from Brisbane and he's edited papers in the market and he knows it very well, but he'd been out of there for a long time. So I think when they announced Neil was coming into breakfast, the reaction actually wasn't that positive, certainly not in the same way it was, you know, compared to 3AW with Russell Horcroft coming in or Ben in Sydney. So to see the reaction to Neil over the first couple of months was actually, it wasn't great. But I think now that he's sort of settled in and found his place and the audience has understood his, you know, his knowledge of the market, it's worked incredibly well for them.
Yeah, audience has really had to meet him or re-meet him to a certain degree.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And look, that's a process and that happens over multiple books. And look, obviously we didn't have surveys for quite a while. So we had Survey 7 the other week. And even in Survey 6, which was the first after, four missing books, which was terribly bad for the radio industry from an advertising perspective, it was great to see, Nine Radio's gains there. They say it takes, three books to really spot a trend. So I think everyone's really looking to Survey 8 to see what it looks like. And if you speak to any of the FM content directors, which we do, Radio Today spoke with Duncan Campbell from Australian Radio Network last week, Paul Jackson, Dave Cameron from SCA wasn't available. They believe that what is happening now for AM, particularly for Nine Radio, is not sustainable. And they're expecting that, particularly in Melbourne, who are now currently 100% e-diaries because of the lockdowns instead of the paper diaries, that there'll be a huge drop off in books to come. So although they're really enjoying this moment, it'll be incredibly fascinating to see how it plays out once Melbourne gets back to normal. And once the appetite for news perhaps calms post, election, and I hate this term, but the new normal, right?
Yeah. Okay, so I've got like 35 things I want to talk off the back of that. But the first thing is you mentioned e-diaries. What's the e-diary? Like, how does that differ from the paper diary?
The e-diary is really just an electronic version of the paper diary. So generally speaking, across the board in all markets, metro markets, surveys are, I think it's 70% paper diaries, 30% e-diaries. So it's really an online form. It's an electronic web-based version of the paper diary. In Melbourne, they agreed that they would increase that to 40% because of the lockdowns. But then, of course, the hard lockdowns came in. So they had to move to 100% e-diaries. So when you look at the Melbourne radio ratings at the moment, it's purely based on that electronic data, no paper data. And I think the FM networks are certainly saying, well, perhaps, that's the reason that we're not doing as well and that 3AW is doing particularly well right now. So CRA are essentially researching, ways to make the surveys more, I'm just going to use the word credible. They won't like that, but more credible
sure.
to media buyers and a simpler process. I mean, it's very archaic the way that it's done now. And a lot of media buyers and marketers, don't really take it as seriously as they do other forms of rating. So they've seen this as an opportunity, particularly in Melbourne, to test this out and see how it goes. So clearly there were some really interesting anomalies over the last couple of books with that data that they need to work through. But I think the intention of CRA is to find a better way to do this in partnership with GFK moving forward.
I'm thinking about the e-diaries and the idea that the music format stations are a little bit concerned they're not being represented as well through the e-diaries, because I would have thought there's a more of a youth skew to an e-diary than a paper diary. And so you'd actually probably have sort of greater, I mean, maybe this is what the problem is as well, where people who are maybe a bit younger and a bit more tech savvy are giving a bit more of an honest appraisal as to how much music format they are listening to. And I would have thought that it outweighed the talk, but maybe they're actually being honest and talk has always been a bit more dominant.
Yeah, look, I had this conversation with CRA when 2GB collected, I think it was an uptick of 7% or something very extraordinary in the 10 to 17-year-old demo.
Yeah.
Their position on that was that it was situational listening. So that was kids at home with their parents listening to 3AW on in the background, and perhaps that was the case. However, ultimately, the data depends on, who's got access to actually fill out, who's participating in the survey. And then, of course, your younger listeners, are they even listening to radio as much as they used to, or are they on Spotify? I haven't seen one of these electronic diaries. I mean, my immediate thought was maybe 3AW was at the top of the drop down or something like that.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's not the case. But I think there's still a huge amount of work to be done, which they're doing in order to sort of stabilize that data so that it's on par with what's being offered now. And that's not, it sounds easy, but it's not an easy process.
So look, I'm thinking about the fact that if I'm working from home as well, I'm probably not necessarily listening to music format in the same way I did, because I'm at home, I've got my CD collection. How's that for an old school thing? Or if you're actually me, you're throwing on a Spotify playlist, you've got that running in the background while you're working. like, surely just that work from home aspect probably is impacting this a lot more than, you know, otherwise to see. What do you think the impact has been of people working from home? Is it only what we're seeing this radio measurement, or do you think there's more widespread ramification?
No, I think there is more widespread ramification. I mean, talking to the content directors and a lot of the researchers and analysts that the networks engage, listening habits have shifted enormously. They all do their own independent research. They also have access to a lot of data that we might not necessarily think about outside of just the traditional, you know, GFK radio ratings. And that's, you know, people who are live streaming radio through their smart speaker or whatever it might be. So they're seeing a huge uptick in workdays, quite a few people less listening in drive. And again, this is at the peak of the pandemic and the lockdowns. People are listening to breakfast radio, perhaps, you know, later in the day than they were previously. So you'll find a lot of breakfast radio shows have been staying on for a lot longer. I mean, Kyle and Jackie O, some days you can still hear it, you know, 10:30 in the morning. So I think there's been a much bigger focus on the workday strategy for networks through this period, because that's where the audience is. And I think that data comes in, and then they've got to take that to the market and educate the buyers and the marketers as to why perhaps they shouldn't be spending their money here and instead, you know, should be spending it there.
Okay, so as we mentioned, Survey 7 came out last week. There's been a couple of surveys that never took place this year because COVID, and it just impacted on everything. With only three surveys this year in total then? That'd be about right.
So we had Survey 1, 2, and we've now had 6 and 7, and we'll have 8 on December 8th.
Yeah, so I mean, that's half the number of surveys than we usually have. Do you think that's actually going to impact on the industry in any sort of way, or do you think that the industry is using this as a bit of cover? Something, for example, you've got the new Nova National Drive show with Joel Creasy replacing Marty Shegold, and with the new titled Kate Tim and Joel show, ratings have dropped down since Marty had left. But I'm thinking that the lack of ratings diaries is probably a little bit of cover for Nova to give Joel a bit more time to possibly embed with the audience, and they don't have to make the excuses that they otherwise may have had to.
Yeah, look, you're right. When you look at the data on face value, the show is down. It was down for Marty's last book as well. So I think what we're actually seeing here is actually perhaps more of a bigger picture here is just the impact of COVID on music stations with, you know, in comparison to the uptick to the demand for news content on your talk stations like Nine Radio and the ABC. So I don't necessarily think there's a problem with the Kate, Tim and Joel show as much as there is a change in listening habits, and Drive has been heavily impacted by that. And given that they have been the number one drive show in Australia for quite a few surveys at this point, they're going to have the biggest loss.
Yeah. Just going back to Queensland, it's just a question that came to mind. Obviously, in the last couple of months, and this has benefited 4BC and Nine Radio quite dramatically, Queensland state election just took place. And I would imagine for the couple of months leading into that, there's a lot more interest in talk format. You want to get across the news and information leading into an election. Elections are kind of fun. You want to get into the minutiae of it all as it sort of leads in. Great for people like Neil Breen, who's just come into the market then. And, you know, obviously he's going to be talking about the election a fair bit. So obviously you're going to have the issue with music, and people are dropping away from music. So I was going to say, have you seen anything in the measurements sort of say that people are more interested in talk leading into an election? Because this is a broader question for next year as we've got a federal election ahead of us.
Correct. There is more demand in Brisbane. There is in every market is the reality, except maybe Perth, who returned to, you know, pre-COVID lockdowns before anybody else in the country, right?
Yeah.
But in Brisbane, evidence of that would be Ray Hadley's book. He's obviously moved up to the Gold Coast. He's doing his show from the Channel 9 studios up there at the moment, and broadcasting back down into Sydney on 2GB at the same time. So his investment in going to that market, being there for the Queensland election and covering it rigorously, I think has definitely had a huge impact for talk radio. And again, the evidence of that is the fact that his show has outperformed every other morning show in the market for the first time in a very long time.
Yeah. So obviously COVID, and this is the real sad part, it's about COVID in relation to the industry, lots of redundancies across the industry, regional areas being hit the hardest. You were talking about the Gold Coast, which, while that's technically considered regional radio, it's so metro, it doesn't really sort of really factor in there. So, like, Gold Coast radio is going to be fine, but regional areas are severely affected and have been pretty early into the pandemic. Radio has traditionally thrived with local voices, and I was wondering how the commercial networks are effectively tackling the fact they don't have the local voices now. Is this a sign of radio outside of metro centres, effectively the networks giving up on that? Like, are networks finding a way to retain local voice at all in the larger regional markets? Like, how's that playing out?
Yes and no. You got to take it network by network. So let's start with Southern Cross Austereo. It made the decision to axe 19 of its regional breakfast shows and instead just have one breakfast show covering all of its stations, regional stations in each state. That was really devastating. They have replaced those breakfast shows with, say, a mornings or an afternoons announcer in market, purely because they have to produce a certain amount of local content in order to keep their license. So that's more of a strategic move than a commitment to local. They might argue with that, but that's how I see it.
Are these new people being hired, or are these sort of program directors who are forced to sort of come on and do like a short little 5-10 minute stint every half hour?
You are seeing that in some markets. I mean, yeah. SEA generally have put in a local announcer who does work days. They might have, you know, a dual role at the station, but that's not uncommon, you know, before all of this anyway, to be honest. Sure. So that's had a huge impact on local radio. From a revenue perspective, regional stations have actually been performing quite well through all of this because COVID hasn't reached a lot of regional areas in the same way that it has the metro markets. It's pretty much been business as usual. Chatting to a few of the regional networks, including SCA, regional revenue has pretty much held steady through this period. And, you know, for Southern Cross Austereo, it's actually propped up their radio business across the board because metro revenues have been so heavily impacted. Grant Broadcasters has doubled down on local. They've seen what SCA has done, and because they have competing stations in a lot of those markets, they've gone, okay, well, while they're taking steps backwards, we'll take steps forward. And, you know, they've added, you know, local sports shows, 24 of them across their whole network. They've picked up quite a few of the 19 breakfast show personalities who were let go and put them into other shows or shifts across across their network. So I think when you know, this is why I say you've got to take it network by network. I think they're all now looking at how they are going to make a buck. And I think SCA's strategy is we need to make as much money from the regionals to prop up the metros. And that's just my assumption. And Grant's going, well, our regionals are doing really well. They're holding strong. So we'll double down on local content because we all know historically that local equals ratings and ratings equals revenue.
So I'm also thinking about just the idea of local, like, because one of the things I love about radio is that local aspect, and obviously radio thrives on local. I'm thinking about across the US, there's an interesting movement taking place right now. You got companies like Axios, who are best known for a daily email newsletter they send out. But then you've also got this new company forming called CityCast. And what they do is they're investing in underserved regional markets with local journalists and local presenters. None of their podcasts have launched yet, but they're in that sort of early sort of research period and hiring spree that's currently underway. But the plan is for both Axios, who are going to focus on newsletters, and CityCast, who are investing in podcasts primarily. They're going to these underserved markets that are delivering local content via both newsletters and podcasts each. And it's going to be supported with a national infrastructure. And I was thinking, like, do you think that there's maybe a space in Australia for a similar company or approach set up, or one of the existing radio guys to say, hey, look, maybe we actually need to focus a bit more on podcasting and invest in this regional area, but maintain a national backbone to it all?
America is a very unique market because their regional areas, many of them are really highly populated. So it's a unique beast. I'm a huge fan of Axios and the journalism that they're doing, both from a newsletter perspective and a podcast perspective, particularly through the US election. I just haven't got enough of anything Axios, especially Jonathan Swan and his interview with Trump.
Incredible.
Three times. And the other one you mentioned, I am across as well. we're talking about radio here, but of course, News Corp have pulled a lot of regional, you know, papers as well over the last sort of, you know, 6 to 12 months.
One of the reasons I was interested in that is because, as you mentioned, the US market's quite different, and there's what they've got these sort of what they call news deserts. And so that's kind of what this is doing. It's plugging these news deserts. And because you've got News Corp who are suddenly just savagely just dropping a lot of local papers, we're getting news deserts in Australia as well. So that's kind of what I was interested in here.
Yeah, I think we will see more of that. For example, Hot Tomato on the Gold Coast, which is now owned by Grant Broadcasters, has a local digital news outlet as well. There has been talk of other networks. In fact, I can't remember, there was a regional Queensland network this year who hired a news journalist in order to start one in a few of their markets in northern Queensland. So I think we will see more of that, and it'll be a hybrid of sort of, you know, radio news, digital news publishing, podcasting, etc. And they'll really own those markets and be multi-platform. We'll definitely see more of that for sure. As some of the bigger players exit those markets, there's always an opportunity.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So radio as a form, it's been really resilient to digital media disrupts in the industry in the same way that TV's been impacted by your Netflix of the world, music format, like you kind of imagine that Spotify sort of play a role there, but it kind of hasn't. Newspapers, obviously, all sorts of digital media have impacted on that. But radio generally hasn't really been impacted. And there's obviously a technology gap that exists for radio where, like, largely a lot of radio listening happens in the car. And people tend to update their cars usually once every 10 years or so. It's not as common as pretty much anything else we do in our lives. Like the car's the constant. I think some people change their houses more frequently than their cars. But we're only reaching this point now where cars are starting to have the technology inbuilt into the car, which actually facilitates digital media playing a role. We're only now starting to see that penetration level of Apple CarPlay and Android Auto actually in cars and people using them to the point where they're not just using, they're just ignoring this new thing that's in their car and it's flipping to the radio that they know from, you know, years gone by, but they're actually using these platforms now and streaming Spotify to the car and all that kind of business. And I guess maybe you're probably really well placed to talk about the idea of, are radio companies ready for this? Like they're dipping their toe into podcasting more and more, but do you think that radio companies actually acknowledge there's this disruption coming probably much sooner than anyone really appreciates?
They don't talk about it on the record as much, but behind closed doors and on background, they are absolutely aware that their biggest threat from a content perspective is both music streaming and podcasting. So they have made inroads. I don't think it's fair to say they've been dabbling in podcasting. I think they've really invested a lot of money there, to not just money, but a lot of effort in that medium. But you've got to remember too, podcasting from a revenue perspective, I can't remember the exact figure that it's worth in Australia this year, but what I can tell you is the total amount projected by Ernst & Young this year for podcasting in Australia is less than the revenue of Kiss FM in Sydney. Right.
Yeah.
So it's still an incredibly small market. So I think radio are well poised at this point from the technology that they've invested in or partnered with from a content perspective to continue to own that space as it grows. The other big area for radio has been their investment in voice and, you know, smart speakers and all of that sort of stuff, where they are seeing incredibly good numbers. People are saying, you know, hey Google, play Nova. That they're seeing really big numbers there. And I think now what they're trying to look at is how do they tell that story better? And the way that they, like, you can hear my Google going off in the background. I just said, hey, but you can, I think what they're working on now is how to better tell that story to the market by combining their radio ratings, their smart speaker numbers and podcasting to give a more complete and fuller picture of how the medium or how those companies and businesses are performing, you know, holistically.
Yeah. I think the I think the two biggest phrases used in my house is, hey Google, play Double J, and that's for us. And then when we're leaving the house, it's, hey Google, play 2GB or 4BC, and that's for the dogs as we're out there. So there's the constant voices. So, yeah, I don't think they're filling out the e-diaries though. So, you know, I'm not quite sure that's being measured as well as probably needs to be.
Yeah.
I can hear my Google coming from the next room right now.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. They can get all that data though, right? So if you're asking your smart speaker to play that Nova, they're getting that data.
No, that's true. I mean, they just don't know that it's two dogs that are listening intently.
They don't care.
A listener's a listener. Thinking outside the industry, it kind of feels like Spotify are ready to disrupt the industry quite heavily. It's investing in both music and podcasts, so talk services effectively. Apple is spending quite a fair bit to build out their streaming radio channels. I look at it from an outside thinking that it looks like disruption's really coming from these external global players. And that's certainly what's happening in TV, which I know remarkably well, and lots of other media. Is that necessarily the big concern here? Is it these local, is it the international players that are going to disrupt here, or do you think there's other factors at play?
No, absolutely. It's the attention economy, right?
Yeah.
Apple and Spotify definitely see radio's audience as theirs for the taking. Daniel Ek, of course, the founder of Spotify, has been incredibly vocal, and I've written about this at length, much to the discomfort of a lot of people in radio. His take is everything linear dies. That's a direct quote. He's coming for radio. And the introduction of, podcasting to the Spotify platform, and then the addition of, you know, things like the Spotify Daily Drive and all this sort of original content that sits between podcasting and music and combines it to make it sound like radio, from a playlisting perspective. It's all about taking radio's audience and getting them to spend more time on their platform versus listening to, you know, Today FM. Not that a huge amount of people are listening to Today FM, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
So, you know, from a industry perspective, and I had this conversation with Mickey Ma from Southern Cross Austereo a few weeks ago, who's the head of music there. And I asked him if he genuinely felt Spotify was a competitor. And he was really transparent about the fact that absolutely, not only does he think they are, he knows they are, and that they can see that happening. So, I think we will definitely see more of a competitive landscape between radio and the big tech platforms. It's been very sort of isolated to date. It's always been network versus network or station versus station. And I think hopefully we'll see the industry stop shitting on each other as much and start actually trying to attack and block what the big tech platforms will do. Because as we know, those big tech platforms have so much money and they will creep up on you. And evidence of that, of course, is, say Google versus news publishers, right?
Yeah. Look, it's interesting that you mentioned that Daniel Ek quote about the idea there's effectively no future on linear, purely because I'm looking at the TV market right now, and there's a really interesting shift happening there where the most exciting company that's really, most exciting service really coming out of the US right now is this company called, well, it's a service called Pluto TV. And Pluto TV is effectively replicating your cable TV experience with a whole bunch of low budget TV programming. So you kind of, on your Apple TV remote or whatever platform you're using, scroll up or down and you're really just choosing a channel that's streaming 24/7. And it could be a station that's dedicated towards cat related content. It could be the Baywatch channel, which is nothing but Baywatch being streamed all day on that channel. There's stand up comedy channels. There's like about five or six movie channels, et cetera, et cetera. Like they are picking up so many viewers because it's reasonably good content, but it's also free and in a format that people are very comfortable with, which is linear. And while there's a lot of TV which is lean forward and things you're watching on demand, the great thing about TV is sometimes you actually want to lean back and you're able to like just load up Pluto for a while and you can do the ironing while some sort of thing's playing in the background. Netflix this week, which is the absolute king of lean forward television, they're doing a trial in France where they've got a linear TV channel running and they're scheduling it exactly the same way that a broadcast TV channel would run. And I'm thinking, because the last couple of years I thought about radio and thought, well, Spotify, Apple, they're going to eat their lunch, etc. But this week, I'm not entirely sure that linear doesn't have the future. Like there's something there.
No, you're right. You're right. It's really interesting to think about. Firstly, I definitely don't need to check out that Baywatch channel.
you say that now, but once you experience that and the Beverly Hills 90210 channel, it'll change your life for the better.
Okay, I'll do it. That's an interesting point. And I think what you're seeing there is really what Spotify is trying to do. Radio's always been about great content. So the best show, the best content wins. When you look at your really successful programs from a radio perspective, let's say, you know, whether it's Kyle and Jackie O, or let's go back to, you know, Matt and Joe on Fox, or whatever it might be, those shows are incredibly influential. You build a habit of listening to those shows every single day. You become hooked to them, addicted to them. You become connected to those shows. And the power of it is local. What will be really interesting to see is how Spotify manages to tick some of these boxes that radio have so well covered, like local, for example, in order to keep the listener engaged. But then, you know, you look at networks like Smooth FM, which is a background radio station. It's not a foreground station like, say, Kiss and Kyle and Jackie O. And people do just put it on and leave it on for the day. And it's hugely successful to the point where it's rated number one, you know, many times at this point.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a true frictionless experience. So the one thing I see against Spotify, at least in its current form, and I'm sure they'll overcome it, is that there's all these points of friction in there for me. If I want to listen to a podcast, it's not a great experience of selecting a podcast and getting a playlist happening. I walk the dogs every morning, but I'm actually there with my phone having to select the next podcast really to keep that experience going. That's an element of friction. Flipping between music and podcasts is another element of friction. There's all these things inbuilt into it. The reason why Netflix are doing a linear channel is because they're recognizing there's a huge amount of friction with viewers sitting there and being unable to really decide what they want to watch, but provide a linear channel removes friction entirely and they maintain the number of minutes that people are watching per day. So it just sort of seems like radio has that opportunity to actually outplay Spotify by having that frictionless experience.
Both those platforms, though, being Apple and Spotify, are making inroads there. You know, now when I open up the new Apple Music app, which I did yesterday, there's like a Jake radio station. So, and again, it's very algorithmic, right? Both the platforms have made a lot of investment in building their own tech, whether that's algorithms or whatever it might be, and acquiring startups that are trying to solve those exact problems. So they are aware of them and they definitely are making progress. But you're right, the radio networks do have an immediate advantage there.
Yeah. Okay, so we've talked about radio, but what we haven't talked about is Radio Today, which is the fine publication that you work for. Now, I look at Radio Today, it is one of a number of radio industry industry publications, but then you've also got your Mumbrellas of the world, you've got Media Week, my former, you know, stable. There's a whole bunch of people competing for eyeballs here. What's your pitch, say, why Radio Today is different to the rest?
Look, our point of difference is very much where we focus. We really double down on the content side of the business. I mean, there's really only Radio Today and Radio Info in terms of, you know, the two sites that are purely focused on that medium. And both sites, you know, I think do a really good job of serving their audience. And it's no different in TV. I mean, think about how many industry sites there are covering TV at this point. Way too many to mention.
But of course, but you want to go to alwayswatching.com, which is clearly the best of them.
That's it. Sure, go on. I think the advantage for Radio Today is our access to the industry. I mean, we really are, you know, on text, on Facebook chat, on Instagram DMs with everyone in the industry all day, every day, which is why we honestly break the lion's share of the big stories, you know, before they happen. And because we're very focused on the content side of the business and therefore the talent side of the business, you know, that brings us a lot of eyeballs, not just from people who are working in the industry inside the sort of insular bubble, but people who are on the fringes as well, like the music industry, who are very engaged and want to know what's happening in radio, media buyers, you know, marketers, other journalists who are covering media, or talent, you know, entertainment content more broadly. So it's actually quite a wide audience. And I think because our attention is completely undivided, all we are focused on is radio. It gives us the opportunity to go a lot deeper than, you know, some of the other more broader sites who are covering other verticals, and their resources are spread across all of those areas, including the ones that you mentioned. But I think every trade outlet that's sort of in the media space right now, and I guess every is a generalization, but most have really carved out an interesting niche.
Now, you mentioned the magic phrase a short while ago, which is attention economy. I'm thinking about the idea of a trade publication at the moment, particularly one that's as zeroed in on a subject matter as Radio Today is. You've obviously got the issue where a lot of people will stumble across, well, people come to Radio Today and I'll make a habit of coming along to the website, like having their morning tea, they'll go, oh, it's Radio Today time, and they'll load up the website and they might check it in later that afternoon. But if you break that habit of not coming direct to the website, like it's easy to lose people from a trade publication that way. And I was wondering what Radio Today has in terms of other distribution points to try to bring people back in. You mentioned podcasts. What else are you guys doing?
So we do, Viv and I do a Radio Today podcast every Thursday. We started that about, I'm going to say about 8 or 9 weeks ago. And the numbers for that have been surprisingly incredibly strong. So that's definitely, you know, connected with our core audience. We have the daily newsletter. So I don't know the number off the top of my head, but there's, you know, thousands of people on that list who get a newsletter each morning at 11 a.m. with, you know, what the big stories are of the day in the industry. So they're probably the two main access points. I mean, our Google Analytics data has been growing 40 to 60% year on year since I bought it in, I think it was end of 2016 or 2017. So it's really growing. And I think that's because we've, again, we've expanded our content strategy beyond just serving those in radio and making sure that we're also serving those that are, you know, stakeholders or have an invested interest in what's happening in the sector.
Jake, I'm a newsletter subscriber. I didn't know about the podcast, but I'll be subscribing to that as soon as we finish chatting because... You know, I'm excited about all things Radio Today right now. Anyway, thank you so much for guiding us through this. There is obviously so much going on in radio that it's good to start getting my head around it at least. I've certainly been out of the game a little bit, so there's a few nooks and crannies that I really need to shine a light back into. But Jake, thanks so much. It's really appreciated.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for this week on the Oz Media Report. Big thanks to Jake Chalinor for such a wide-ranging chat. You can check out Radio Today at www.radiotoday.com.au. If you could help out this podcast with a review over at Apple Podcasts, that'd be great. I know it's annoying to hear me ask you this every week, but if you like the podcast, leaving a positive review really does help out the show a lot. And if you're not on Apple Podcasts, hit the share button on whatever your podcast app is, send it to a friend, share it on social media, every little bit helps. Now you can find more episodes of the Oz Media Report via your favorite podcast app. If you'd like to leave a voicemail, you can do that. Just head over to the Oz Media Report website at www.ozmedia.report. Thank you for listening. I'll be back with you next week.